September 10th. Today, I decided to visit Woodard Bay, my third trip there. If you imagine the southern reaches of Puget Sound as a long, multi-jointed arm, the several inlets in and around Olympia are like crooked fingers. Bud Bay is in the middle of downtown Olympia, flush with hundreds of moored boats, all sizes and kinds, mostly white-hulled, like a picture postcard on a sunny day as I drive down the steep hill of San Francisco Street on my way to Woodard Bay, or walk by them downtown, bracketed off on the broad boardwalk lined with artistic and culinary amenities. About 8 miles down the road is Boston Harbor, a sittable beach that comes and goes with the tide. Nice restaurant, Friday night events, lots of craft beer and fine wine. Bridget and Mark took me there once. Henderson Inlet is about 2 miles east of that, fully natural, a narrow basin of water that fills up and empties out with the tides, lots of gulls and ducks floating around to feed on whatever all that moving water brings in and sweeps out. Woodard Bay is much larger, on the opposite side of the narrow peninsula that separates them. I heard about Woodard Bay from Carla, whom I met, as I said, at the Bigelow neighborhood block party. She said it was must-see for the hundreds of cormorants that come there to roost during the summer, the many thousands of bats that leave there and head downtown to eat insects every evening during the warmer months, and the harbor seals who haul out to rest and in the spring have their pups on the remnants of the lumber-moving infrastructure still left in the harbor. I went there for the first time maybe a week or so later, impatient to see what she described. When I got there, a little parking lot off a side road, I was stunned. The inlet was empty. I mean, no water, as far as I could see through the trees. I had already witnessed this extraordinary phenomenon on one of my first walks downtown. There was the bay. Where was the water? It was, of course, just low tide. It's not that I never saw tidal recessions. They happen every day on the Atlantic coast, the water moving back and forth on the beach by 50 feet or more. But no matter when you look out, the ocean is still there. Here, these little capillaries, it just comes and goes, full, then empty. I had difficulty comprehending it, as if one of the lakes Carol and I used to fish at, mid-sized Pennsylvania lakes, would be there when we sat down for our lunch and be gone when we headed home for dinner, nothing but a huge mud flat with nothing on it. I made a mental note to look at the tide tables before I headed back to Woodard Bay, assuming I'd see the birds at all once the water came back. I returned a few days later at high tide, and sure enough, the water was back. I could hear the cormorants squawking just up and around the bend, so I headed down the walking path, dizzying arrays of trees and understory growth ramping up on either side, like the most lovely and awesome gauntlet you could imagine having to traverse. About a mile down, I reached the end point. Off to the right was a perfect vantage point to watch the cormorants, hundreds of them, just as Carla said, all on the other side of the bay, some in flight, but many dozens of them roosting in trees across the way. At first glance, from that distance, there appeared to be maybe 20 nearly barren trees rising above the leafy green below with what looked like many dark gray leaves on them. But I soon noticed that these leaves could take flight, or, in fact, the cormorants, on their way to coming and going out into Puget Sound to fish. To the left, at the end of the path where land meets water, was a complex system of heavy wood pilings with rail tracks on them, stretching out into the bay maybe a quarter of a mile. An impressive sight, even in its current state of disrepair. I had no idea what it was or was for. Today, I found and read some of the informational signs describing the lumber industry in the first half of the 20th century. Rail cars bringing thousands of huge logs down to the bay from the surrounding forests and dumping them into the water, where men, essentially walking on water, would boom them into rafts to be dragged up the Sound by barges toward Everett, north of Seattle, where the lumber mills processed them on their way to their ultimate marketplaces. When that industry changed in the 1970s, all of this apparatus became irrelevant or redundant, much to my benefit, since the whole area became a nature preserve. Well, became, after a fight between a few ardent environmentalists and developers, the details of which I don't know much about, but can imagine. The same thing happened with Watershed Park, I know from the signage, a long legal battle to conserve that space in its natural state. Today, I was thinking about the vagaries of time, of one's own time. How, were I walking here 60 years ago, if that was even allowed, the din would be cacophonous. People everywhere, train cars rumbling in and out, nothing natural at all, except for dead trees being dropped into the water and many living human beings risking their lives to scramble them into rafts. Now it is so quiet. Eerily so for my city-tuned ears. Gulls and ducks float and fly serenely everywhere. There are bird boxes for swallows nailed to all the huge poles out in the water where purple martins come to nest. The gravelly-looking areas between them attract the seals, which haul out to rest or give birth. Underneath those structures, the sign says, many, many thousands of bats are sleeping right now, dreaming of a trip to town for dinner this evening. But to get back to my story, today I walked at Woodard Bay. I hadn't checked the tide tables. The water was gone. I didn't care. I noticed that immediately and wondered why. Best I could tell was, really, now I'm just used to seeing this odd behavior of water. It doesn't shock or confuse me. And I knew I could still see the birds if I walked down the path. That made me happy. Normal is a hard state to reach when nothing you see looks the same as what you used to see. Having a lake disappear and reappear twice a day was my new normal. And when I started down the path, the first half of which is like a long valley between two upward sloping hills, maybe 20 feet high, most likely man-made a century ago to get a road back here for logging purposes, I didn't see a blur of humongous trees and way overblown ferns. It was space, deep space, receding deeper and deeper, up and back. I am enamored with depth, that sense of the background drawing the eye further and further into its embrace, because, as I've explained, I lose depth perception from time to time, everything going flat, maybe for minutes, maybe for months. Having lived during those interims without depth, I have come to love it. And today it was there in its glory. I tried to take a few photos of little scenes where it seemed most evident to me, but I knew before I even looked at them that that was pointless. I know that great photographers with great cameras can capture depth in its mesmerizing glory. My daughter does that. I am not one of them. I am a clumsy guy with an iPhone. Half the time, wearing only my distance glasses, my fingers end up pushing buttons that flip the screen around. Oops, why the hell is my face staring back at me? Or activate the video. Oops, why is this thing still going? Or crop the edges of the frame. Oops, why is what I was looking at not here now? If you want to see this particular depth, come here someday and walk with me. I won't even need to show you. It will take your breath away. On my walk back down the path, having loitered long at the peninsula's endpoint, left to the bay, then right to the inlet, then left again, then the little outbuilding with all the historical signs, loitering there to learn something, it started to rain. Hard enough to wet me, then a little harder. Full-fledged rain. I was never much of a fan of such rain back in the East, but this rain was lovely to feel. I know from previous visits to the Northwest that the rain here is different from Eastern rain. It comes down kind of blotchier and softer, seemingly slower, I'd say, drifting. Maybe because it has such a long way to fall from a sky so high it is more a seamless veneer of silky gray than a dark deck of individualized clouds. This rain was like that, a few big, gloppy drops of it, cool, soothing, commingled with a soft spray, or a mist, equally soothing. By the time I got home, it had stopped. I know, come November, everyone keeps saying, gravely, it will be like this day after day. Maybe I'll get bored by it, even irritated by it, after a few weeks. Everyone else here seems to. But today, right now, this rain is just as pleasing to me as blue skies. It doesn't matter, right now, what I'll think in November, if I even make it that far. Today is what I have, and it is surely much more than quite fine. Quite right. Right fine. Right now.